choice really be the end? To be stuck inside a mobile with the Memphis blues again. When Ruthie says, come see her in a honky-tonk lagoon, where I can watch her waltz for free neath her Panamanian moon.
You able to hear anything now?
I
was doing Dylan right now because you said you wanted Dylan. I did.
I want to do Dylan. I want to do Dylan. I want to turn it up, man. Football,
oh, God, you got a lot of noise. Can you hear anything?
That was the voice of Ray Cat Olson talking live on the radio on the day he moved out of the anonymous mass audience onto the airwaves and into the headlines. He did it on October 6, 1975, by taking 10 hostages in a branch of Bankers Trust on 6th Avenue. And he did it with a gun and a phone and a radio.
This is a special report from WNEW News.
This is John Lyons, and it's all over peacefully.
This is Mike Eisgrau, WNEW News, on the corner of 12th Street and 6th Avenue, where some hostages have been pulled out, and also the man who's been holding them, a man named Cat, apparently has given up and has surrendered to police. This came after an hour and a half during which there was no telephone contact with the man, where the police were trying to shout into the front of that bank, the Bankers Trust Company office, and then try to get him to come out. And for some reason, this man has apparently given up, and this long siege, more than 8 hours, is over. The hostages seem to be okay as they were brought out in a police car just past me, and the man now, surrounded by policemen with rifles, apparently is being put into a car to be taken away. This long siege, apparently over.
The whole ordeal started at about 3. The police say Fast Ray Olson apparently walked into the bank with a gun. Somebody called police, and the gunman found himself trapped. He turned the gun on the people inside, 10 people, and the siege was on. A few minutes later...
That's okay, it's all right. It's Mike Eisgrau. You're in the bank right now, huh?
Yeah.
What's going on?
We're hanging out, man. We're waiting to negotiate to get Patty, the Harrises, and the Oriental chick out of jail, and then also to get $10 million in gold.
Are you one of the people who are holding people hostage?
Yeah, would I rap to you if I wasn't?
I don't know. You're in the middle of the bank right now, right?
Yes.
And what group are you...
Sibonese Liberation Army.
And who are you holding there? What is the scene there? Can you describe it?
We've got 10 people here, hostages, handcuffed and on the floor, held at gunpoint, and...
Have you heard any of them?
No. No one is injured.
And how many of you are there?
There's two of us.
Two of you?
Yes.
And you're members of the Symbionese Liberation Army?
Yes.
It turned out later that Olson was not connected in any way with the SLA. In our original call, right after Eisgrau identified himself as a reporter for WNEW, Olson perked up. Yeah, he said, play some Grateful Dead. He was a fan of WNEW-FM, and he had a radio with him. Eisgrau got Olson in touch with WNEW's Scott Muni. Muni was able to convince Olson that somehow Muni could help, and he and Eisgrau were whisked downtown by police officials and set up direct contacts with the man inside the bank. It turned out that the gunman became insensible in further contacts, and police now tell us the last three hostages took the gun away from Olson and ended the whole thing. Again, the bank siege is over. Everybody is safe. The gunman is in police custody. I'm John Lyons, WNEW News.
What you just heard was a news summary of what might be called the police story of Cat Olson. Journalistically speaking, the bank siege on 6th Avenue is already old news. What remains interesting, however, is the media story, or more specifically, the search for what radio means to the faithful audience that takes this magic box into their lives as a friend. Cat Olson was one of them, a distraught listener and certainly an extreme case, but nonetheless a textbook example of how personal the audience regards this 55-year-old audio medium. Whatever his motives or intentions, Cat became an instant radio personality, and he played his part conscientiously.
I guess I'm on the air. I should watch my language?
Now, listen, hey, man, when you're uptight, you'll have to watch your language.
the only thing I want to do, you know, while you're there, if you're going to be there, you're going to stay there a while till you make up your mind, till you have someone you can talk to. And I don't care if you pick out someone that you would like to be a go-between, between you and whoever you want to negotiate with. If you know someone like that, I'll get a hold of them for you, man.
Is everything I'm saying being heard on the air?
Yes.
No kidding. I should say hello to some people.
Do you have the radio on now?
If I put them both on, I really can't concentrate, so I'd rather just talk to you.
Okay.
But I could...
You can say anything you want to anybody.
Yeah, I guess I could.
Mm-hmm.
I'll kind of wait on that.
He waited on that for a couple of hours. We know how the story ended from a police point of view, but for Cat, the climax came when he got the opportunity to do what he really wanted to do.
Now, if you want to say something, anytime right now, because the tape is rolling, say what you want to say, right?
I want to be able to hear myself also on the air.
You will hear yourself. When you hear yourself, I'll talk to you again.
Okay.
Okay? Wait about 5 seconds and then start talking. And then you're not going to hear right away. You're hearing music now. You're not going to hear right away.
Well, and then I'll hear everything that I've said. And then we'll let the rest of these people go.
What I gotta do is I gotta do a tape because we're on the only line we can talk on.
Okay, so you're gonna tape it and then play it over the air.
Right.
And when I hear it on the air, then I'll know everything is cool.
Right.
Okay.
When the statement finally came, it was not about politics and not about money, but about music.
First thing I want to say is I want to say hello to Jerry Garcia out there. I know Garcia's out there, and you know, all these years, man, you've been giving me music, and I've been digging it, and getting high right along with you on psychedelics and whatnot, and, you know, grooving along. Garcia, thank you. I want to say hi to Bob Weir, Jerry Garcia, Phil Lesh, the bass. Right now we're listening to Boxer Rain with Phil Lesh, and it sounds great. And who else is out there? Let's see. We got Mickey Hart on percussion. We got Bill Kootsman on drums, Mickey and Bill. And I want to say hello to Mickey and Bill. And we got Donna and Jean, the newcomers, man. God chalks them up, you bet. So we got Donna and Jean. And also, let's see, who else we got? Just blasting through the Dead family.
I just cut the mic off.
I guess I've covered the band. Pigpen. Pigpen is gone. And it was old TC who used to play on the old records. TC is somewhere else.
Pigpen is gone, you're right.
Right, Pigpen's gone. And then we can't forget Robert Hunter. We can't forget the lyricists. We can't forget Tales of the Great Rum Runners and Tiger Rose. I'd really like to hear a couple of cuts off those two albums, you know, something. Someone pick out almost any song on that record. The whole album is completely terrific. So any songs on those records are really great. So I'm just a dead man myself, you know. On any night, the Grateful Dead are the best fucking rock and roll band in the entire world. There's not a better band than the Grateful Dead.
It had all begun hours earlier when Mike Eisgrau of WNEW News reached Cat by phone in the bank. Olsen requested music by Dylan, The Stones, and The Grateful Dead. In a second conversation, he repeated his request. The third time he spoke to someone at WNEW, it was Scott Muni, because...
I've gotten good vibes from listening to your raps on the station, this and that. So from what I've heard you say and this and that, you know, I guess you are cool, man. Sure.
Well, I've been around a little, probably a lot longer than you. You sound young to me.
Oh, yeah, I'm 23.
Well, you are young, you know. Can I walk in, talk to you,
yeah,
bring you out if you are guaranteed that no one is going to shoot you?
Oh, for sure, Scott. I wouldn't mind seeing you in person.
Man, if I came there and walked in and you got to recognize my voice and walked out with you knowing that no one would shoot you, and everyone would be all right. You haven't hurt anybody, don't you understand that?
I'm gonna split for a while and listen to the radio and try to get some negotiations worked out with these guys. If you want to come down here, you know, and, or talk more with, I don't mind. I enjoy talking with you. You know, about the mo- you know, I don't
some of these people who call up.
Hey, you got this number, man?
I can't relate to straight people very well. You know, it's just never been my scene.
Okay, if I'm going to come down there, and if I can help, man, I'm going to make it known to them that I'm there. And you know my voice, and if you hear my voice and you want to talk to me, I'll come in there and talk to you, man.
Out of sight. Yeah, I'm on the way. Well, I know all of this I got. Don't fly away.
Cause I love what I love and I want. One of the most successful and recognizable voices in New York radio, Scott Muni, was thrust into a new role totally by surprise that fateful Monday. What happened in the ensuing 25 or so minutes amounted to some of the most gripping radio drama ever heard. One human being desperately reaching out to lend a hand to another before a countless audience of ear witnesses. I spoke to Scott about his radio audience in general and Ray Olson in particular. When you're sitting in there on the afternoon of a normal show, who's out there? Who are you talking to? Who is your audience? What do you imagine or see or feel it to be?
Oh, I try to think of so many people made up of different moods. You know, there are people who are on a downer. People who are feeling very happy about some particular thing. I think most of all, people who are just going about doing their regular thing, and so maybe with the music that you play, you reach them somehow or other. They may hear something they don't like, and then the next thing they'll like it, and so you keep them content some sort of way.
Now that brings me to the specific question. Obviously, Cat Olson was in a very desperate situation, and in this moment of need, turned to a friend, the radio, Scott Muni. What was on your mind in that terrible pressure and situation of dealing with this one individual out of your mass audience?
You know, I can't really answer that specifically, except that all of a sudden, there he was, and I started to talk to him, and I must tell you, everything else left my mind. I know that I didn't do commercials, I know that I didn't play music, and the length of time, I had no idea how long I was talking to him until he said, "Aren't you off the air at 6 o'clock?" And I said, "Yes." And I looked at the clock and he said, "What time is it?" And I said, "It's 2 minutes to 6." And he said, "Would you come down or whatever happened then when I got off the air?" And that was the first time I really knew what time it was. I really wasn't aware of anything. And I have a habit when I relax, I lean back in the chair. And the chair leans back and I was just back there with the phone and I lost track of everything. I just was in with him. And was trying to understand him, and I got the feeling very early that he was that he needed help and that he was mixed up, and I think he was just confused. And he said he was a musician. I think he was looking for attention. He wanted someone to pay attention to them. You know, he's just like everyone else. Everyone needs a friend or someone to talk to or someone to turn to, and he had no one. Yeah.
The question still remains: who was Cat Olson? Why did he act the way he did? What makes a person reach out so far? What was he really saying to us?
He said, "Listen, you people, I've got a question. You won't pay attention, but I'll ask anyhow. I've found a way that will get me an answer. Been waiting to ask you till now. Right now, am I?
Can your head, then can we talk, or can I do something, or is there anyone you would like for me to contact for you?
No, I'm not in touch with anyone, you know, on the outside world, really. I've been out of touch with everyone. And here I am, by myself.
Is there someone else there with you?
No, I'm by myself.
You are by yourself?
Yeah.
The whole question of loneliness led us to ask Dr. Morton Bard, professor of psychology of the Graduate School of the City University of New York, about the link between the audience and the voice on the radio.
The major question that we're dealing with here is the whole quality of aloneness in society. In an increasingly complex society, one tends to feel increasingly alone. And the radio has a great value to us in cutting through this sense of aloneness. It's like touching someone without actually having that other person there. Secondly, I think that the information that comes through from the radio, whether it be music or words, distracts one from being with oneself, from experiencing what many of us have begun to feel as the pain of aloneness. And I think that's why radio is so important.
Hello, Mr. Radio.
Person on the radio is a person with whom one can be close without having to tolerate all of the disadvantages of closeness. And then you can have your fantasies, you see, without having to experience whatever pain there is in being close to someone else.
Hello, Mr. Radio.
I spoke to Professor Ed Wakin of the Communications Department of Fordham University about the responsibility of the radio personality to his audience.
Well, I think that responsibility is not an abstract classroom responsibility that anybody up on a campus can talk about. The audience dictates it. The audience says, you be real or we turn you off. And what is characteristic of the successful radio personality is that person is real and is talking to me alone, even though I may be one of thousands, hundred thousands, or even millions in the audience. That is dictated. There's no choice. The guy who is not real is the one who's not listened to. So there's no room for any abstract academic talk about it. Either be real or talk to yourself. That's the challenge for anybody that uses a mic. And I feel that the audience understands the media often much better than the people running the media.
Sure.
Because they are the consumers, and for them it's a daily diet that has meaning. And I think reading over the letters that were sent, you get a sense that these people out there understand radio certainly much better than people who are writing textbooks about radio, and people often who are running radio operations. They don't understand that they have a magic box on their hands, whereas they think in terms of time units, sales, and ratings, which are all necessary for staying alive, but what they really have is something is a magic box.
Like most of you, I responded to the Cat Olson story in a very personal way. That's how it is in a society increasingly dominated by the sights and sounds of radio and TV. In this age of split-second communication simultaneously shared by countless millions, it would be a serious mistake to ignore the media implications of the Cat Olson story. Ed Wakin explains why.
The symbolic act that this Cat Olson performed in coming into that bank was he came in, remember, with a gun in one hand and a radio in the other. And as it turned out, happily, he used the radio instead of the gun, which is a symbolic act that really gets to the heart of what went on. Because this is a member of that audience experiencing the extreme version of what the normal listener experiences, which is a very intimate contact with the radio, and he didn't want to leave it behind. In fact, it's quite clear, listening to all those tapes that were made of his conversations, is that the radio was his companion, and maybe, come to think of it, when he said there are two of us here, maybe he meant that his radio was the other person.
In any way, if I can keep you calm and keep the situation calm and see if we can get people together to talk to you and try to get something that you want or get an understanding with you.
You know, you could play the new Dead album. Can you play the whole thing, or am I asking too much to take up your...
No, listen, man, I don't mind doing anything. I really don't. I mean, you know, you realize that, of course, our audience loves the Dead, and they like the kind of music you do. The one thing...
There's a lot of Dead freaks out there.
If I can do...
The Cat Olson story, A Media Eye View was conceived and co-produced by Pete Fornatel and Ed Wakin. Production assistant, Dom Nuzzi. Special thanks to Dr. Morton Bard, Stanley Siegel, Mel Karmazin, Jim Gordon, Mike Eisgrau, and John Lyons. Technical assistance provided by Joe Aiello and Brian Ferguson. We welcome your comments. Send them to The Cat Olson Story, care of WNAW-FM, 565 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10017. Tonight's show is dedicated to Scott Muni. This is Dennis Elsa speaking.
I tell you what I'm doing anyway, right here on the turntable. I've got music, so, you know, if that's going to help you, then
yeah,
fine.
Music helps.
I think you've already made a step, you know, a good step. Okay, if people were uptight in there and you saw that they, you know, there's too much pressure and everything, if you can be cool.
Professor Wakin mentioned the letter sent to Scott Muni and the radio station concerning the Ray Olson incident. In all my years at WNAW-FM, I have never witnessed such an outpouring of genuine pride and concern from our listeners. Here are a few excerpts.
I always had a strong affection for the DJs at NAW-FM and always felt that if I left New York City, I will miss you all very much. Though I've never seen you, I identify with you in a different and personal way. For me, it was very understandable that he might come to you and WNAW-FM for help.
After listening to you for a number of years, both on AM and FM, I feel you're a friend, and it's so nice to feel proud of a friend.
WNAW-FM has, for the past 8 years, been more than an entertainment medium for its listeners. You have all functioned as very personal and deeply trusted friends. It was not at all surprising to me that the person Cat most wanted to talk to was his favorite radio friend. Surely, for many of us, that person at the other end of the microphone has been company and solace in times when we needed a friend.
I was with you yesterday from the very beginning to the very end. When the entire ordeal began, I thought Cat was crazy and he deserved anything that happened to him. But as time went on, I became more involved, understanding what was happening and reading the voices, yours and Cat's, and feeling what was being felt. I was actually worrying about you, about him, about the hostages and the people around the scene.
I'd like to thank you for giving me some optimistic light. There are still people who care for some unknown person in need. You see, when you helped Cat, you helped me as well.
People, let your light shine. Come on now, let it shine. Come on, let it shine on. Oh.
The letters speak quite nicely for themselves. Many of them inquired about the course Ray Olson's life might take in the ensuing months. In an effort to bring the story up to date, I spoke to Cat's attorney, Stanley Siegel.
As you know, at his arraignment, I asked the judge to commit him to a psychiatric hospital for psychiatric evaluation to determine whether or not he is fit to stand trial. The psychiatrist at the jail, in their infinite wisdom, I say that sarcastically, found that he was fit to proceed.
Now, that is something of a setback from your point of view.
Not really. You know, I've been practicing criminal law for 20-some-odd years, and I've yet to find some of the psychiatrists who work for the city to come back with a finding that a person was mentally incompetent to stand trial.
One last question, Mr. Siegel. Would you care to speculate on what you think the long-range outcome of the case might be?
Well, you know, after 25 years of practicing criminal law, I still have faith in our system. I think in the long run, we will convince the state of New York that this young man is troubled, he is sick, he needs help, not incarceration. Incarceration will do nothing for this man except possibly destroy him. And I think in the long run, the system will come through for him and get him the help he needs.